Awesome. So, have you guys been having a good time so far?
Yeah.
So, Dave asked me to come in and talk to you guys, kind of jumping off of what Mark talked about this morning, which I wasn't here to hear. So, for all I know, I could be repeating everything he's just said, and it would be redundant, and I apologize. I don't think so. But it's so a little bit more about how when as a person we decide to follow Jesus, right, how that practically changes our lives. And how that actually makes a difference in our lives. Because sometimes I think that when we talk about following Jesus, there are some things that are really practical that we can use on an everyday basis, stuff like praying and stuff like reading the Bible. But I think there's a lot of things that we don't necessarily see really obviously. For example, like we don't necessarily see the change in ourselves after we decide to follow Jesus. I know for me, for example, it wasn't until someone came to me and recognized that the change that was happening, there was a change happening inside of me, that I really started to look for it to see if there was any you know, clear change in our life. And that's something that the Bible talks about, that as Christians we produce good fruit when we follow Jesus. And so today I want to talk a little bit about my story and what that looks like. And there certainly will be a little bit of this idea of, you know, some fruit being produced in my life. But there's also a big part of my story that's, you know, not necessarily, you know, on the up and up all the time. And I think that that's an important part of followers of Jesus, that we understand that, you know, giving our lives to Jesus doesn't mean instantly our lives become wonderful and fantastic and awesome. That, in fact, for the most part, the situation around us really doesn't change. So I can think of a couple times in my life, both before I was a Christian and after I became a Christian, where, you know, those kind of instances happened. And so I think of when I was a little bit younger than you guys, so I was in grade 8, I was at Golden Avenue, so I hadn't become a Christian yet, and I was being bullied a lot. I was a really annoying kid, I'll be the first person to admit that. There was one, so after about 2 years of being bullied, I decided that, you know, my life wasn't worth living anymore, and it was time for me to just, you know, help myself leave the planet. And so, I can still remember the day, I still remember it was December 17th, 2006. I sat on my bed, and I had a knife in my hand, one that my grandpa had given me, and I decided that it was, you know, like I said, my life wasn't worth living, I had no purpose in life, and so I decided I was going to kill myself. And, I remember hearing a very distinct voice, telling me that I didn't know what my purpose was yet, and that, you know, someone at 12 years old doesn't know what their purpose is. And so, you know, in hindsight, I know now that that was God's voice, but at the time, I felt really weird that this voice in my head was talking to me. But I listened to it, and I went back to bed. And at that time, again, part of me expected the next morning I would wake up and, like, the world would change, right? Like, I wouldn't be bullied the next day or anything like that. But, like, sure enough, I woke up the next morning and went to school and got beat up again. So, you know, my world didn't change as I expected it to be. And then I think of when I was in grade, I guess it would have been grade 11. So I played a lot of sports through high school. Sports was a big part of who I was in high school. And I was a really good badminton player. I like to play the least coolest sports ever, so I played badminton. And I woke up on October, so another day I remember very, very clearly. So this is after my graduation. I woke up on October 14th. I went to get out of bed and I couldn't walk. So I kind of like fell flat on my face, fell into my desk chair, and I couldn't walk. And that began kind of a 8 month saga of, you guys ever seen like The Hunchback of Notre Dame? Like I walked around like Quasimodo for 9 months with really bad back pain. And
I remember that. So if you don't believe him, it's not fake news. I was there.
Yes.
He definitely had the
Hunchback. I walked around real funny for a long time. I actually had to have surgery to fix the problem. But so again, this is this story of like there was a period of that time where I really questioned God and I really doubted God. Because I was under the impression of, you know, like, I give my life to Jesus and my problems go away. Right? And so I kind of went through this really weird phase where I got mad at God, and then I started doing this thing where I would, like, bargain with him. which is like so funny. I try to like make deals with them. I'd be like, I'll stop doing this if you make my back pain go away. And I'm telling you, like, this was like excruciating. Like I missed, so in the first semester of high school, I missed like 76 days of school because I couldn't get out of bed. It was so painful. I had to sleep with this like special pillow that like kept me like elevated so my legs wouldn't like go paralyzed, stuff like that. But I would bargain with God and like, I'll give up this if you take my back pain away. And that didn't work, obviously. So I got to this point where I'd come through, you know, all the emotion of it, being mad, being angry, you know, trying to make bargains with God. And I got to the point where I kind of just accepted that this is the lot I had been given. And that I needed to figure out a purpose for it. And that's an important part, is that one thing that changes is our perception of what happens to us after we give our lives to Jesus. So before we give our lives to Jesus, we might look at the trouble in our lives and we might just think like it's random. Or maybe we think like bad luck or, you know, I don't know, the universe is conspiring against us or whatever. But after we give our lives to Jesus, we start to see this as all of this stuff having a purpose. And there's a really good, this entire book of the Bible, book of Job, is really all about this idea of like, it's a guy who gets tested a lot, and, you know, Job finds the purpose of this through it all. And so, I got to that point in my story with my back problems where I kind of got out of this idea of like, okay, bad stuff shouldn't happen to me, and I started looking for the purpose of why it was happening to me. And it really wasn't until I'd come through the whole thing that I could look back and see what had happened and why it had happened. And it didn't make me, feel happy that it happened, right? I certainly was still a little bit mad that I had to go through it and that I was robbed of the things that I really, really enjoyed. But I did understand now that more about this idea of why God has a purpose for it. And it's only that I can only understand that once I got to the point where I could understand that when Jesus is the cornerstone of your life, that's the basis by which you start understanding things. So like I said, that before you give your life to Jesus, it's tough to understand the things that go on around you. It's tough to understand why things happen. It's tough to understand what's going on, because it just seems very random and very disordered. But when you understand that Jesus is the cornerstone of your life, everything happens for a reason. And you can really start to drill down about why things are happening to you. And you can really start to use that new knowledge to make purpose out of the places where you think there is no purpose. So for you guys, right, I mean, I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know your families. I mean, I know some of your families, but I don't know all your families. So for some of you, your lives might be fantastic, right? You might have two good parents. You know, you might have all the money in the world that you could ever need, but there are other people who don't have that luxury. And they come from tough homes, or they come from, you know, parents who they themselves struggle with issues. And I think that it's in those tough times that when Jesus is our cornerstone, that we understand that it's not about the circumstance that we're in, but that we can always go to Jesus. Right? That you know, we're never left nor forsaken. There's a section of the book of Romans that talks about the fact that nothing can separate us from God's love. Right? Nothing can separate us from God. And so I think it's important that we evaluate that in our lives, what that means for us as Christians. But I think of the kind of the most impactful time in my life, and I talked about this. So I spoke here 2 years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, and I talk about this as much as I have the opportunity to, because I think it's so important. That's why I struggle with pornography. So I'll get it out of the way now. Statistically, so if I took, I know there are, what, 25 of us in this room. So 80% of you struggle with porn. That's a fact. Statistics. It's not about personality. It's not about, but it's just statistics. Just fact. 80% of us. And I was one of those. And so this was something in my walk that I brought with me from my life before I met Jesus and into my life after I met Jesus. And it was funny because that was, again, one of those things that I kind of just expected to kind of like go away, right? Like I gave my life to Jesus and it should just kind of disappear, right? Bad stuff from my life should just go away. And unfortunately, I didn't see that happen, and so I really struggled with it for a long time. So I remember, I can still remember very, very vividly the first, like the first pornographic image I ever saw. It was in grade 3. I was at Ecole Saint-Jude, which is just down the road, behind the second portable at the school, and actually my next door neighbor was in my class, and I guess he'd found a magazine in his house and brought it to school, and you know, was like showing it around, right? And those are images that you know, in many senses are still burned into my memory. But it wasn't until I'd been convicted, and don't get me wrong, so I say I started struggling with it kind of grade 7, grade 8, and I didn't actually kick it until I was, 21? 22, so we're talking 10 years, 11 years, something like that. And all this time, right, like I said, before I met Jesus, and even after I met Jesus, where, you know, we talk about it. We guys like me who talk about that porn is bad, right, and it's a sin. But even then, right, I really hadn't committed to kill it from my life, and I really hadn't committed to deal with it, and it wasn't until, like I said, I was at Fleming. I was in college in my program. And some stuff had happened, and there was a lot of change happening in my life. And I can remember pretty vividly lying in bed before, trying to fall asleep, not being able to. But it was the first time that I was convicted by God that I needed to cut porn from my life. And there's a difference between, like, when I tell you, right, so I'll tell you right now, there are people sitting in this room who struggle with it. It's just a fact. And I want you to know that you're not alone. Because that's the first way that the devil, like, the way the devil keeps you in sin is he separates you. So he says that you're the only one who struggles with it, right? And if you tell anyone else, they're not going to like you. They're not going to be your friend, whatever, right? They're going to reject you. And I can tell you that as a fact because those are all the same thoughts that I had. And that's the reason why I went 10 years with the struggle with it. It's because I was living under this impression that if I told anyone about it, that, you know, they would reject me. And I would have no one to stand there with me. And I'll tell you right now that if you come up to me after here and tell me that you have an issue with it, I will have more respect for you being willing to admit it than I do you thinking that you need to keep it a secret. Because it's not a secret. Because 80% of men, 80% of guys struggle with it. But I digress. So I was lying in bed, and I was convicted. And so conviction is different in the sense that it's not me telling you porn is bad. It's God telling you porn is bad. And when God tells you something is wrong, then you're answering to God now, right? You have to make that decision, right? It's not like you're answering to me if I tell you porn is bad, and you go, yeah, I know porn is bad. But like when God says, you need to cut that from your life, it's a very different feeling. And not only do I remember that, but I remember very distinctly God also telling me that I had to tell, not my wife, but at the time, my girlfriend, that I struggled with it. And that was kind of like, that's what made me more anxious. It wasn't so much this idea of, like, I had to be able to admit to myself that it was an issue, but that I had to go and tell the person I love very, very much that it was an issue. And my biggest fear was that she would just, again, she would leave me, right? She realized I had this problem and it would be a deal breaker for her, and she would leave and I would never see her again. And so I toyed with this idea for a while and I didn't know what I was going to do. And the anxiety was like, it wells up in you and you carry it around. And again, I got back into that pattern of thinking of, like, why is this happening to me? Right? Why do I have to tell Catherine? Why do I have to admit it to someone that it's an issue? Because, again, I was living under this impression of, like, when I come to Jesus, right, when I give my life to Jesus, these things kind of just go away. Right? And unfortunately, that's not how our lives as Christians work. They don't just go away. We have to work at them. And so there was one day we were just, Kath and I were walking. I was in Peterborough. We were at a park called Jackson Park. We sat down on a bench, and I just kind of told her. I just told her what was happening and how long it had been happening for, and in some sense, my worst fears were realized, right? Like, she got up and walked away from me, and I thought that would be the end of it, but she came around, she sat back down, we talked, and it was the first time in my life I'd ever actually told anyone. So in 10 years, right, first time I'd ever told anyone that it was an issue. And it was the first time that I would say that I really, you know, really clearly followed through on something God had made clear in my life that I needed to do, right? So sometimes in our lives, we might hear God talk to us and ask us to do something, and we kind of like play it off as like, well, I don't know. I don't know if that was, you know, I'm not going to follow through with that. But this was the first time I can remember in my life that I very clearly heard God say, you need to do this, and me following through with that. And that was largely because I had made the decision that, like, if God was going to be in my life, if Christ was going to be my cornerstone, then I actually had to follow through on that. I had to actually walk the walk and not just talk the talk, right? Not just be willing to admit, yeah, like, I love Jesus. Jesus is great. Jesus is a friend of mine. But, like, not actually do anything about that. And I think in some sense that's where a lot of you guys are right now. Maybe not with porn, but in your lives there's something or many things, just like there are in my life still, where you're talking the talk and you're putting on a good face, but really you're not walking the walk. Right? You're not really using Christ as your cornerstone. In some sense, the thing you struggle with is the cornerstone of your life, because it's the thing you go back to when, you know, things get rough, right? So you're, maybe it's drinking, maybe it's weed, you know, whatever, right? But I want to challenge you that if we call ourselves Christian, Christ must be the cornerstone of how we live. And that should make some pretty clear change in our lives. And so I want to challenge you that for that thing, whatever it is, or those things that you're struggling with, that you make Christ the cornerstone of that thing. And so you might be thinking, well, what does that actually mean? And I think in our world, we get tied up in this idea of like having to work harder at stuff, right? We have to like, you know, if we don't want something to be an issue anymore, then we have to try harder to not let it be an issue anymore. It's funny because, like, the Bible actually talks about the opposite of that. The idea that the things in our lives, like the burdens, the things we carry, right? Jesus talks about this. The idea is that, like, his yoke is light. The yoke is like the thing that you put on a cow to move a, what's the word I'm looking for? Plow. There we go. Right? The idea being that, like, we carry all these burdens, but we don't need to carry them. That we can give them to Jesus. We can put them on the cornerstone of our lives, who is Christ. And in that, and through that, that's when we see change happening. Not when we as human beings do our best to try not to sin, or do our best to, you know, try to fight the things in our lives, but whether when we just go to Jesus and say, Jesus, I sin, I struggle with this, I struggle with that. You know, heal me, and Jesus, help me to get rid of this in my life. And I think it's important too that we, if we're going to make that commitment, that we understand that change is a long process. Like I said, it took me 10 years, 11 years, however long it took. It took me a long time. And it's, you know, it's a story that, honestly, like, I still have to pray against it every day. It's like, in the culture we live in, the world we live in, it's very, very easy to access it. It's on my phone if I want it to be on my phone. It's on my computer if I want it to be on my computer, right? And so I pray against it every day. and God has been gracious. He's not let it come back into my life. But I say all this to let you know that if you commit to making Jesus your cornerstone, and you commit to get rid of the bad things in your life or the sin in your life, you're still going to relapse. Right? There are very few people I know of who kind of wake up one day and decide that, you know, God, I'm going to give you this sin, and it's never an issue again. Right? Part of the word we use in church is called sanctification, which is like this idea of like moving towards being more like Jesus. And moving towards being more like Jesus is exactly that. It's a process. And so that some days it's 3 steps forward, other days it's 5 steps back. But the idea is that we're always trying to move towards Jesus. And so, you know, as I finish up, I want to challenge you guys to pick something or to pray that God would show you that thing in your life. And that he would help you to make him the cornerstone by which you go about defeating sin with. Not your own ability, not your friends, not your parents, your brother or sister's ability to help you with something, but that you would go directly to God and say, God, like, this needs to come out of my life, and it needs to come out now, and I want to make you the cornerstone of that thing. And I want to make you the means by which I'm able to cut this from my life. So, there's like 5 minutes left. If you guys want to ask questions about my life, I mean, I'm an open book. I'm pretty open and pretty vulnerable. So feel free to ask.
Did you have Game Boy back
then? When I was a really little kid, I did. But, yeah, not anymore.
I still have Game Boys.
Nice. Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was really painful. Yeah, yeah.
Did they find out what it actually was?
Yeah, they finally did. It took them a little while. What
was it?
So in your back, you have these, like, your spine is made out of bones, but in between these bones are these, like, discs that are made of soft cartilage, and what had happened is I damaged one somehow. The doctors don't know how I did it, but it was pressing on my spinal cord, and so that's why I couldn't stand up straight, because if I stood up straight... functional. So I had to have surgery to fix it.
When you were still in school and you were getting bullied, did you ever have any friends?
I didn't have a lot of friends growing up.
Any other members did end up for you when you were getting bullied?
No. So I was a really annoying kid, and I'll be the first to admit that. Do I still think it was right that I got bullied as much as I did? No, by no means. But I think even today, right, like, it's, I don't have a lot of friends, right? Like, I mean, I have a few friends that I consider very close, but I think that, first of all, I think that high school, and I think that grade school is a very terrible place for people. Not in the sense of, what you're learning is bad, but, like, I mean, when I hurt my back in high school, I mean, the number of ways I would get made fun of, was like, it just wasn't fair. But yeah, I mean, I think that in some sense I became the person who stood up for other people through that. And I think that's important, is that, you know, if you don't, just because you don't have anyone to stand up for you doesn't mean you can't stand up for others.
I have two questions.
Okay.
Do you have a computer that uses floppy disks?
Yeah, so I still remember floppy disks, yep. That was a thing, 8.5.
And did you have a metal plate then?
A what?
A metal plate.
A metal plate?
Yeah, it's like the spinal cord.
Oh, no. So what they did is they went in and they went in with like a little machine, threw a little cut in my back, and they just pulled off the piece of the disc that I hurt. So they pulled it off and it took pressure off of the spinal cord. Yeah. Yes. It's funny, I was actually in so much pain before surgery that after surgery I felt fantastic. Like, it hurt. Imagine, like, taking, nail and jabbing it into your foot and then walking around on it. Like, I had pain that went all the way down my leg and stuff like that. And so after surgery, it didn't hurt because it just felt nice not to have a nail in my foot anymore.
I remember that, my uncle Brendan, was dead on a glass cup.
That would hurt.
And, he didn't weigh that much. He only released 7 pounds. And he broke it. Just one floor.
Yeah.
So, he barely ended any of his weight. And the glass cup, really had to go.
Yeah. Any other questions? Sweet. Well, thanks for letting me share a little bit of my story. But like I said, if you're going to take anything from me today, first of all, I think the most important thing is that, the stuff happens in your life and there will be issues in your life till the day you die. And I mean, Dave and Ted, right, they can attest to that. They're not perfect. As far as I know. Oh, darn. Okay. I mean, just Ted. I'll talk about Ted here. Because Dave struggled with the pride issue. That's his issue, actually. So there's going to be stuff in your life until the day you die. That's the only escape you get from it is death. And that you can try as hard as you want as a person to fix the issue. And that's futile. And that it's not until you make Jesus the cornerstone of your life, right? When you put the issues on that cornerstone, on Jesus, that you can really see your life changing. So I'm going to pray, and then I think it's probably about time for us to move. So we're going to hang out here, though, like after I pray. I don't want you guys leaving the room, because I'm sure the girls will be, like they might be finishing up still, so we're going to give them the time that they need to finish up. So let's pray, guys. Hey, God, thanks for today, and thanks for this weekend. A really cool time for us to get together as young guys and just talk about, real stuff that's happening in our lives. And God, I'm thankful that you use everything in our lives for your purpose. That we might not understand why stuff is happening or why we struggle with what we struggle with, God, but I'm thankful that you have a plan in all of that. And God, I pray that as you identify in us the issues that we need to be working on, God, that we wouldn't do it in our own strength, but that we would go to you as the cornerstone of our lives and put those issues on you and on your blood on the cross. And God, I thank you that we can do that, that you sent your Son to die for us in our place. And that through believing in him, we have him as a cornerstone in our lives. So God, I pray a blessing on this weekend, that lives would be touched. And yeah, God, I just pray that if anyone is struggling with habitual sin, God, whatever that is, just help them to recognize it and help them to put it on your Son on the cornerstone. Yeah, just thanks for everything you do for us, God. And even though we don't deserve it, you continue to bless us. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.